Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Eliana Murillo, founder and CEO of Element and co-founder of Alquimia Tequila. Welcome, Eliana.
Thank you so much for having me, Mario. I'm super excited to be here. I love the work that you do. And as you know, I'm a big fan of how our worlds intersect. So I'm a big fan of all the data and everything, the insights you guys share, and I'm excited to dive into this conversation.
Yeah, likewise. And I'm so surprised that it was my bad that I didn't think to have you on our podcast, but like we were talking earlier, so we finally got to meet in person, actually technically for the second time. We met at a Google event. Maybe we'll touch on that first time, because that's a funny story. But we were at a like a networking dinner, and somebody just randomly asked us about multicultural marketing, and you and I just went into full multicultural marketing mode. So I was like, you know, light bulb, I gotta have you on.
Absolutely. Well, it happens when it should. And that conversation just said to me, Mario and I can nerd out on this for days. And we were like tag teaming. We were in a flow where you could tell they were watching us like, did they plan this? Because it was like layup on layup. I loved it.
Alley-oop, alley-oop. Yeah, for sure. So I mean, so much to talk about. I mean, I want to talk about everything you're doing with Element, of course, Alquimia, but let's chat a little bit about how we met. So you were actually at Google. I'm going to just pass it to you. Tell us how you got to Google and what you did at Google, because I think that's a fantastic story.
Thank you for that. I'll try to keep it tight because, you know, we have tons to talk about, but the short of it is, so I'm from Oxnard, California, grew up there with my family, big Mexican American family, ended up at Harvard because my mom basically made me apply. And when I got there, I realized that, you know, not a lot of us are in these different companies. Like, we don't see role models that look like us often, you know, just still being the first in many ways. I'm the first in my family to work at a corporate company. And a lot of my friends were in a similar situation. And so I started a group for Latinos interested in business, but not just consulting and not just investment banking, which was pretty standard at the time. So I wanted to figure out, how do we get into other companies and build relationships with people on the inside to see, is there a fit there? Is there an opportunity there? Can I open up doors for my friends and peers? And so I built a relationship with recruiters at Google, never ever thinking I would work there. I thought it's just a technical company, right? And so I helped two friends get internships there, facilitated some intros. That just makes me really happy, being able to open doors for people. And then they were the ones who said, when are you going to apply to Google? And I was like, why would I do that? I don't code. Like, I just didn't think it was relevant. And they said, no, there's obviously, you know, sales and marketing and legal and all these other teams. So I ended up there as an intern after finally listening and applying. And as an intern, I was in digital sales, advertising, really, digital advertising, and learning the business and seeing how the small business owners that use Google tools didn't look like me and just weren't diverse broadly. And I asked around, and it wasn't that they were being excluded. It was really more that people just didn't know about it. And I'll weave in the tequila story a little bit. My family and I have an organic tequila company called Alquimia, and it's always been a family project turned business, really everyone's side hustle. And when I was at Google, I mean, I'll be candid, at the beginning, I felt imposter syndrome was real and, you know, trying to find my way. And I always mentioned that the moment for me where I snapped out of it was when I was at a table, you know, having a seat at the table, right? I was at the table in a meeting about small business marketing, and they were talking about all these strategies, and it clicked for me. I was like, the consumer they want to reach is, you know, B2B, it's a small business. And that's business owner like my dad or like, you know, my family. And what they're talking about is not at all where we are. You know, I had to convince my dad to get a website at one point. It's like, we fully bootstrapped this ourselves, did not have a lot of context of digital advertising and marketing. And so I was like in this new world that my family had never been a part of. Like I said, first in my family in a corporate setting, absolutely first in tech. And so I was able to raise my hand and say, you know, I think that these products, you know, analytics and AdWords, all these things are great. But most small businesses aren't ready for that yet, especially diverse ones. You know, they don't have the luxury of, let's find an analyst to understand what our analytics are saying about our company. They don't have an intern that's running A/B testing of ads. How do we make it more relevant? And by the way, diverse ones, there's a little bit more nuance there. And yet we're the fastest growing demographics. So I made a whole basically case for how to reach us and why to reach us. And so this, I jumped from, as an intern, I was helping with some really cool projects around helping advertisers reach Latinos specifically. And when I came back, that's when I was more involved with these conversations about how do you reach people. And I started off piloting things like, you know, I thought, well, there's other small businesses out there that don't know about Google products. So let's do a workshop and let me find other Latinos and Latinas at Google that have skill sets in what they do, but they're connected to the community and they care. And so we did these workshops, sort of what I just kept saying, we're piloting something. It wasn't meant to scale. Google has, you know, millions and billions of users. In this case, it wasn't about scaling. It was just proving that there's something unique here about a very special audience that is so entrepreneurial. And I call it the paradox of opportunity, right? It's like we're the fastest growing demographic, period. Super entrepreneurial, starting so many small businesses, but often facing that digital divide or the lack of awareness of digital tools. So long story long, back to how we met. Through this work, I was able to pilot projects, create almost prototypes of things, and pitch to executives and say, hey, look what I did with my 20% time at Google. There's 20% time that managers can sign off on to say you can do something outside of your core role. Today, my mom, who my family's very aware of what I'm up to, and my mom said, your 20% was more like your 80%. You know, it was like late nights and weekends working on all this work around ultimately access for diverse communities. And you know, I try to advocate for a broad range of diversity in the US, but of course, coming from my background as a Latin American, that really shaped my lens and having very diverse friends growing up and things like that. So I was able to create the multicultural marketing team about 7 years in. I was there for 10. I left last July. So a decade of Google, majority of that time spent building out this, some companies call it like a center of excellence. So a team focused on not being product specific, like most teams at Google are run, you know, there's teams that run Gmail and YouTube and so forth. I was really audience specific and was building out these early approaches to how do we make the case, pulling the data, which is part of how we connected, explaining the customer persona and the opportunity and reaching them. And why does this matter from a company objectives, like how we're reaching those KPIs and OKRs in a way that's nuanced, and then finding creative ways to execute strategy from hiring agencies to working with internal stakeholders to really understand what's needed. So we did a lot of work both, you know, across products, a lot of emphasis on entrepreneurs, small businesses, but also it was neat that the research I was developing to get internal teams to understand the opportunity was research that our sales teams were able to use. So teams focused on multicultural could take the research that my team and I developed, put it in front of their Fortune 500 clients and say, hey, here's the really interesting insights about diverse consumers on the web, B2B or B2C. And so we had these events, these multicultural marketing forums, which still exists. And I love it because the work continues. And I guess I'll get to the fun part with you where we had this event, you know, at one point of the day, I'm on stage sharing these insights and things. And fast forward to the end, you know, you have the end of the night party with everyone just connecting and reflecting on the day and all that. And I was wearing this VR headset. We had done this campaign with creating a VR experience about Jose Marti. And I took it off and you were, I think, like right in front of me and you're like, hi, I'm Mario. And I was like tripping out in this VR experience. So long story long, you know, we tried to create these experiences based on data, bringing the multicultural opportunity to life. And then all of a sudden you're right in front of me and you're like, hi, I do data. You totally do exactly what I believe in. And so we didn't get to chat much, but it was a good little, that's sort of a metaphor for my life at the time where I was so deep in this whirlwind of creating an opportunity within a company. And then had these little moments, these touch points with people on the outside who were also doing work that aligns, right? Like had we sat down in that moment, it would have been like, oh my, we're in the same world. Like our universe is so aligned because you're working with clients like our sales teams are with the research I'm bringing to life and the internal stakeholders I had across product teams too. So I'm glad that it took us a while to reconnect, but I bet since then, and for both of us, we've done a lot of work that makes our conversations even more interesting now.
For sure. And thank you for sharing your story. And I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I know, but hearing it in this format, it's just amazing how you've been advocating for small businesses. And I think there's just so many great lessons in your stories for large, well, in your story, I should say, for large organizations looking to focus on multicultural consumers, whether that's B2B or B2C. Mm-hmm. I mean, one, the thing I heard, right, is like that 20% time.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing. I know that's not possible. Well, it is possible, but I know it's difficult for a lot of organizations to do that. But the fact that you followed your passion, I think is incredible. And I think, too, what stood out to me was the fact that, you know, Google supported you and gave you a seat at the table because I think one thing that's often missing in diversity and inclusion conversations, to me, is like the business perspective, right? Like, of course, I believe in it from an ethical perspective that we should include all voices. I mean, for me, being a Latino American, like that's a core part of my identity. Mm-hmm. But I think what's left is that it's like, it's a huge business opportunity. Like you said, like Latinos, founders of color, and actually more specifically, it's Latinas and women of color are starting businesses at a faster rate than any other cohort.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you know, the fact that Google, one of the largest organizations in the world, didn't know how to approach that. It took you coming there. I mean, shows like what happens when you empower individuals in your organization, right?
Absolutely. I think people often ask me, like, was it Google? Was it you? Was it the combination? I think it was both. I think, and by saying Google for me is really the stakeholders, the individuals who made a personal commitment in a professional setting to support me. And it took, you know, I was reflecting on it recently, even growing up, my mom would be the one who said, you know, you have to go talk to the adults, you go ask for what you need. And, you know, I was raised knowing that it was okay to speak up, which is not very common in our culture necessarily. And is not something that corporate settings teach us as diverse up and coming or present day leaders. So what I had to do was, like, I give full credit for people who supported me and sponsored me. They know I'm so grateful for that. I couldn't have done this alone. There was no way. I mean, I had to be sponsored to get budgets and headcount and things like that. But along the way, I mean, I had to pilot as much as I could. And often 20% time, I mean, I think it's great, but it's really 120% time, right? It was like, I was up at 5 a.m, late nights and weekends. I committed to that because I knew it felt right. It felt like there was a real opportunity here. I'd gotten a taste, even as an intern, I was 20 years old seeing this. And my background's in sociology, so I'd done a lot of research in undergrad. And so I was able to, it was natural to me, like, let me go find the research. Let me go find the data points. And so I made these, you know, little pitches here and there and would make my decks as if I was working on this full time. And I always think, like, you have to work for the role you want. And I had 5 roles at Google. I created 4 from scratch. One of those is multicultural marketing, but that was my second to last role that I created. I'd made others first. And the reason I was able to do that was, you know, having that 20% time, like I said, it was on my own time, but I knew that a manager wasn't going to get upset if they heard I was working on this. I was definitely getting my core role done and then doing extra on top of it. And I framed it always as a business opportunity. And I thought, I don't ever want to feel like I'm selling on my community at all, but there's a way to do right by a consumer that is not being reached and align it with business goals. I'd look at what is the company trying to accomplish at large and which product areas or which objectives would be smart to make relevant to this community, because how are we uniquely positioned to benefit? You know, for example, like when I learned that Google wanted to make Chromebooks like the platform, the hardware device for all students. And I thought, well, wait a minute, if 1 in 4 students born every day is of Latin descent, do they know that? Let me go see if they know who's running this. Let me go investigate. And then I'd go to my executive sponsor and say, hey, I'm going to go reach out to this team. Here's my kind of ran her through the plan. And I'd say, like, if they agree or push back, or if we need to go at it kind of splitting the agenda, we're going to collaborate. Do I ever support? And so they made me work for it, to be honest. And it's good. Like, I knew that I was not given any handouts of like, oh, there's this cute project that someone wants to do. Like, I had to apply into marketing just like everyone else, even though I was able to create the role. That headcount wasn't just given to me. I had to make that happen. And I say that because sometimes people have the misinterpretation that, like, this is just the right thing to do. So someone's going to just figure it out, or almost think like, oh, it naturally just happened. Like, no, this took a lot of work. And I give credit to the sponsors who took the time to review my strategies, make sure they made sense. And if I got it through them before going to other product areas, then I knew it was practically bulletproof. I'm not a very operationally focused person. I care so much more about the strategy, the vision, and I had to work with very ops-minded people who then could confirm that the strategies make sense, so that when I was in front of engineering teams or, like I said, other product leaders, I could relate to people in a way that made sense for their business goals. And I always framed it as, this is how we all win. This is not going to, you know, I heard some people say, we're reaching everyone. We don't really have bandwidth for that. And I get it. Sometimes there were new projects, products where they had to focus, but I always made sure they knew, if you want to reach everyone, I can help you reach a very important piece of that pie, that population segment. And by the way, we are younger than the average consumer, so we have a longer life cycle as a consumer. We have more kids than most demographics. So that means you're gonna reach one of us, you're gonna get the whole family. And so I was able to help them understand how this is value add. This is how you reach your own goals, but we're going to help you do it in a way that's culturally relevant. And that's probably going to build a lot of loyalty for a long time to come.
Yeah, I love that. And you're also providing a template, you know, for some of our listeners that are interested in starting multicultural marketing in their company, mm-hmm. Or like diversity and inclusion. Absolutely. To rely on data.
Yes.
Right. Because, again, I think it's difficult, because I have these conversations sometimes with executives or managers that come to us. It's difficult when you rely on emotions to talk about something, especially when it comes to multicultural marketing, because you're talking about sensitive topic like race. But when you can rely on data and show some of these numbers, it makes your case so much easier. And there's so much data out there for you to pull to make these cases. So I think that's a great place to start.
Yeah. And to that point, I agree completely. What's interesting is people often don't know how to frame things with data. And so you can tell a really good story with data, and you can really guide someone through the opportunity, what the challenges are, how are we uniquely positioned to solve them with our tools, our products, et cetera. How many people, you can turn qualitative things into kind of quantitative insights, right? Like, how much do people resonate with a certain value set? Things like that, right? What are their consumer patterns? And the combination to me has always been, it's the data and the story. So often when we did focus groups, or I was just in community talking to people, consumers, small businesses, I always say, like, the data gets the meeting, but the story closes the deal or pulls the heartstrings or the purse strings, whatever the goal is there, because I could find some qualitative insight or the anecdote, right? Like, I know a business owner who said X, or I know a consumer who said Y. But without the data points, it's easy for people to disregard or not really take it seriously. And to the point of emotion, I mean, I know I'm that passionate Latina in the room, right? Like, there's stereotypes about how we get really excited about what we're doing or frustrated. And I mean, early on, I started telling myself, don't get mad, get strategic. If someone doesn't get it, well, then get more strategic, get better data, find better stories. And I'd create my own case studies all the time, even if it didn't scale necessarily. I told myself early on, it's scale or stories. I either find the data points at scale or propose a strategy that really scales, because obviously it's a massive company and I was sort of conditioned for scale, thinking, but what's the bigger plan? But if it wasn't that, then instead it's like, okay, well then what's the story? Can I find a small business owner that can illuminate how human this is, pairing it with that data? So then you can kind of get people from both sides, depending on when they are. Some people are more quant heavy. Some people want it to seem human and real. And like, how do we find more of those Mateos out there, or the Amandas, whoever you're reaching, that like customer profile, how do we go find more of them? Okay, well, here's the data that tells us, you know, where they're shopping or what they're doing. And that to me is the fun part, which is like, kind of remixing things a little bit, you know, and not having it feel too dry, but also not having it feel so emotional that people feel like it's not strategic or distracting. Instead, it's like, no, there's a really big opportunity. And I hope people feel as excited as I am. And I get very excited about the data that makes that feel like a viable business opportunity.
I love that. And, you know, the research nerd in me is geeking out. So what, and we have, you know, we have research nerds, and I say that kindly listening. So like, what do you prefer to start with? Do you prefer to start with the data point, or do you prefer to start with the story, or sometimes does one come first and sometimes the other one?
I think it depends. Like, for example, right now, just as context, I do consult and coach leaders at companies that they're multicultural teams and do talks for them. But I also work with diverse founders of startups. And so in both cases, for example, right now I have a startup in mind that's in the med tech space, and now I can't unhear it. I hear all these people talking about medical related things and how it's actually really culturally relevant. Certain values that our communities have that keep them from pursuing certain medical procedures, things like that. So this is a little bit of context. So what I noticed recently, to the point of it depends on the situation, because it could be in either case, sometimes I'll hear someone share a personal experience, but it sounds like such a universal insight, like, or maybe not universal, but definitely unique to like, or probably true for many other people of that same demographic or with similar psychographic profiles. So when I hear someone say something, I'm like, wait, you're probably not the only person who's dealing with that challenge or who has that unique experience. Let me go find data that can bring that to life in a bigger way to say, like, here's Erica. She told me her experience literally yesterday. She shared this challenge with some medical things. And then let me go find data points that help validate that that's true for more than just her, that align with that. I don't believe in using data to just tell the story we want, but if it makes sense of one unique insight that is true for many, many people, then that's really helpful, because you can't just say, oh, I had one person say this thing. Well, okay, then someone said, well, who else is dealing with this? Is this a problem worth solving, especially from like a tech perspective? Are we solving a problem that really needs to be solved? Or is this a feature that we really need to take on to add to our platform? So that's the case, right? Where it kind of opens my eyes to something and then it kind of piques my interest. And I'm like, well, let me go dig into that a little more. And sometimes I see data points and I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, X percent of whatever it is this. So then I'll keep that in mind and I start to pull more data points related to it. And then I'll start asking people questions. And it's either in a formal focus group or industry peers or just consumers. Just it's planted that seed in me. And then I start asking and seeing who has the experience that can, again, using the word illuminate, who has the words, the testimonial, the quote, or sometimes I even take pictures of whatever they're doing. I try not to almost over-formalize this sometimes. People sometimes say like, how do you talk to the consumer? Where are they? I'm like, they're around us all the time. You just have to listen. You have to pay attention. But I pair that with like, you know, that really complements the data points that I have been kind of ruminating on and thinking this could be an opportunity, because if the data proves it, then there must be truth there. Let's go find that story that makes sense of the data point. So then we know this is real from both, with both lenses in mind.
For sure. I love that. And it's so cool having you on because, I think of you as a marketer. I mean, I know you're more than that. You're a founder, but like, I just see you as a marketer at heart. But like that whole story showed me that you are also a researcher because you have that curiosity at the core of it, right? And I think that's so important for the research, like to be in research and insights, and I would argue even marketing, like you have to be curious, yeah. Right? You just, so that's really cool to see. And so I think this is a good segue though. You mentioned some of your work now with Element & Co. So tell us like, you know, you left Google, I mean, is it a year or 2 years now ago?
Yeah, I left in the middle of a pandemic. Everyone thought it was crazy. And I thought, you know, for a number of reasons. One, I felt first and foremost grateful to Google for what I was able to do, but I also felt sort of complete. You know, we did a lot of good work. I collaborated with a lot of people. I always give credit to my team and the partners and everyone. But because of the work I was able to do in multicultural, and I co-founded Hola, which is our Latino ERG resource group. So which we actually positioned as a BRG, business resource group, and then merged with the previous ERG that was kind of a community, but we were doing a lot of great work in the community impact oriented. And so now there's chapters in 35 countries. It's huge. And there's a lot of alignment with internal teams and so forth. So between my multicultural team and the Hola effort, and I also hired a coach along over the course of a few years. And she worked with, I picked about 12 leaders who are really phenomenal. And I thought, well, if there's not a lot of senior leadership that looks like us, then let me incubate the talent to make sure we're all rising together. And so I funded this program and it became the prototype for now a program called Sage, which there's several hundreds of Black and Latino Googlers being coached through. This as an amazing talent development program. So, you know, people weren't sure what I was up to when they started it, and now it's a real program. And so through all of these things, the point I wanted to make was, when I left Google, there were about 15 full-time roles dedicated to multicultural across the company. And that took many years to incubate. Having, you know, I'd find people and say, hey, do you want to work on partnerships with nonprofits? Help me run these partner groups. And I'd coach them along the way. And then when either headcount was opened or a role was available, we'd pitch and I'd go to bat for these people. And I'd have my executive sponsors even write letters of endorsement for them. It was all hands on deck because I knew like, yes, I believe in the center of excellence. I believe it matters to have a core team, but I also know we need a seat at the table at all these other product areas or different functions. So in doing that, it was beautiful to see a lot of talent developed. I mean, there's people now working on multicultural across YouTube, philanthropy, media buying. It's just amazing. And these are people that are they're family to me forever, which I just so appreciate. So I knew that I was ready. It was time and I was ready to leave because I knew the work was going to continue. One of my biggest fears was that it would just drop off. And so that's not the case. They're leading it and I'm very proud of them. So that was one from a like, do I leave now? Google is, I think, in a good place to continue this work. And I'm cheering them on along the way. Separately, though, Black Lives Matter happened and it affected me a lot because I just felt like there are so many challenges that obviously we're more than aware of that have been problematic for centuries, but we have tools now that could be making a really big difference for diverse communities, the Black community, Latino communities. And I'm like, there's products that still need to exist. There's still so much we can do to help diverse business owners and startup founders. And so I felt really compelled to lean into that. And knowing that I had this background working with founders for years, both startup founders and small businesses, and just felt like there's more I can do and I want to really dive in. And then with my own small business, as a family-owned tequila company, one of the few Mexican-owned and operated companies, I knew that this was going to affect us a lot with restaurants and bars closing and all these things and difficulties in production and importing. And so it just felt like kind of the perfect storm for me to finally step away from something that I really love doing, but knowing there's more for me to do. And it's still in the same space. You know, I'm still my day-to-day, it's changed in that, you know, I can create my own schedule in a very different way, but the mission hasn't changed, right? So the mission of access was, I think, the word for me at Google, but now it's still true to what I love, but it's about amplification in many ways for me now. And so like, for example, over the last year, it's been awesome to doing my own prototyping now for my work. For Alquimia, we had to get creative with digital marketing. I was doing virtual tequila tastings and masterclasses for startups around the world. And, T-Mobile, TPG, that was really awesome. Different collaborations with groups like the Alumni Society and others that you know. And then that was, my Alquimia hat. And then I was doing a lot of talks for companies as they were figuring out what do we do around diversity in three different buckets. Either how do we take our ERG efforts to the next level? Or how do we do true inclusive efforts in our core roles, right? Like not a full multicultural marketing team, but if you want to be an advocate on your team, how do you do that? And then number three is if people are doing multicultural marketing, how can I help there? And so I've did talks for Verizon, Capital One was recent, Qualtrics. And so what's been neat is people have just been showing up. I haven't pitched any clients yet, which has been pretty remarkable. That was one of my, a fear of leaving any company is like, is this going to be a viable opportunity? And I think there's just so much appetite for this. I think people are really leaning into the curiosity, but also the urgency. And people are realizing like, if you're within a company, you have agency, you can do something, there's resources, even if the company is selling paint, right? Like you can be doing anything and there's a way to make it relevant. There's a way to make an impact and have it do right by the business, right? Like there's, you don't have to, I don't think everyone has to go work at a nonprofit. And if you do, that's fantastic, but there's a way to be entrepreneurial and impactful within a company. And so, yeah, it's been awesome. And now I coach, consult startups, leaders at companies, you know, from Amazon to, like I said, Qualtrics, different leaders. And I believe in it because I knew that I was supported along the way so much. I'm so grateful for my sponsors and mentors, advisors, but ultimately there wasn't a blueprint for what I did. I had to figure that out on my own. And I'd try to get input, but I was the one putting my time, reputation, everything on the line to try to make this work. And more than that, I didn't know what step came one after the other. I just tried. I had to launch and iterate as much as I could. And I see how so many people are still like, it's almost like my journey of like ERG work, incubating roles, creating a team, co-founding a startup within Google. I was able to do that within our incubator. I had a lot of different stages of my work. And now, for example, today I met someone, an amazing friend I grew up with. Like her dad and my dad went to college together. We really grew up together. We were 2 weeks apart when we were born. I just learned she's a software engineer at a tech company. And I was like, when did this happen? She did a boot camp and she's like, you know, our diversity numbers aren't there. And the company is actually committed. They care, but we're like, how do we as an ERG help them? Do we focus on HR? Do we focus on the business? And we just met up for burritos just a couple hours ago. And it ended up being a whole strategy session on how they can think about leveraging the ERG to not only build community internally, but to also attract diverse talent, to make an impact in the business, to highlight stories. And in fact, I told her about how sometimes ERGs want to be resources to a company and maybe they can start putting the data together and different things, right? But often it's like, how can we complement what the company's doing? And maybe there's success stories that can be told from customers that they aren't speaking to. And I mentioned you and I said, you know, I did a talk for Qualtrics. I did this workshop with their ERG leaders. And I told them, hey, I know one of your customers. He's an American Latino business owner and he's a fan. Like, can you guys make something happen there? And so just the fact that sometimes network effect isn't in people's favor where they're in a company and they're like, I don't know who our customers are. But how do we connect the dots in a way that's impactful to, again, tell those stories and hopefully, you know, make a smart case for why this works, why the work matters and why investing in it is more than writing a check. It's about empowering leaders to do it and giving them the resources and the tools they need to get it done well.
That's incredible. And, you know, what I have some thoughts on that, but one, I have to say, I love meeting for burritos. I mean, That's the new meeting for coffee. So right? You gotta trademark that.
I will say it's from my friend, like my homie from high school, who has a taqueria, and I'm so proud of him. Ojai Tortilla House. If anyone ever makes it to Southern California, Ojai, it's a great small business, and I try to I live and breathe this, right? Like if I'm going to say I'm supporting community, then we're eating at diverse restaurants owned by, you know, minority owned founders. And I just think it's like being a conscious consumer and being an advocate for this work means like really living it. So that's why we were there specifically.
Yeah. And I'm learning about your business because I've only seen one facet, but I think it's really incredible how you're bridging, you know, working with these large organizations. Within that, you're helping ERGs, supporting diversity and inclusion initiatives, multicultural marketing. Mm-hmm. Then you're working with small business owners, and that's just strategic growth consulting, taking all the knowledge that you learned from Google, right, and applying it there. I've been kind of grappling with this idea of. So pre-George Floyd, right, like I feel like diversity and inclusion and multicultural marketing were like walled gardens in my mind. Mm. And then, you know, post-George Floyd, it kind of just, I think the wall just kind of broke down.
Yeah.
And so I guess where I'm going, like I would love to hear your perspective. Like what's the relationship between multicultural marketing and diversity and inclusion in large organizations, if any? Mm-hmm. Like, is there a thread there? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it really, there is interconnectivity. I think it's important. I'll give a real example for it rather than being hypothetical. So one of the best campaigns we ever did, which the core product team said it was their best effort, the best niche collection they'd ever done. I collaborated years ago with the Google Books team. So like, you know, digital books, you can like almost like a Kindle situation. And I knew Hispanic Heritage Month was coming up. At the time we said Hispanic Heritage Month, now I think we call it Latin Heritage Month. People rebrand things. But I said, hey, would you be interested in doing a collection of Latin American literature and also like Latino American literature? And I can help market it. And they said, well, we've never done a niche collection that's specific to an audience like that before, but okay, they're willing to try. And usually that's just all I needed, someone saying yes to try, and then we'll prove that it works, right? So as a multicultural marketer, I could have just picked the books myself, and I could have just said, well, what Latin titles are already popular on the platform, right? There's a very almost stoic approach to this, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I thought, I want our people inside of Google to feel proud of this and that we did it right. And that, and also to mitigate, I don't want anyone saying, well, why is this book on the list and why isn't this one on it? So I wrote an email to Ola, the group that I had started, but was approaching them not as like, hey, I need, you know, we're planning mixers and gatherings and things. This is more like, I would like your input as consultants internally. And I never want to make people feel like they're doing our job, but I'd love for them to feel included. And so I made a form and said, hey, if there's any books that mean a lot to you, what would you recommend? Because I also knew that once this goes live, that ERG group is a group of brand ambassadors that can promote this and tell their friends, like they have their own networks. So if we're not going to throw a ton of money behind advertising, how can we leverage the talent internally to be ambassadors for what we're doing? And so we got so many good titles recommended, and we were able to offer them at a discount to promote it. And it went really, really well. The Google Books team said it was the most successful niche collection they've ever done, period, hands down. Loved it, right? We love when it's a win for them and for us.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best feeling. And then I said, well, okay, I'm glad that happened, because context, when I created multicultural marketing, my commitment was I want to do multicultural, looking at obviously Latino Americans, but African American, Asian American, the three kind of big buckets. And people said, well, it hadn't been done before. So it was like, we haven't done segmented marketing in any country, not even like French speaking Canada, for example. So can you focus on one to start? And I knew they thought that was likely Latinos and doing marketing in Spanish. So I knew, okay, I'm gonna have to educate people. So I made sure they knew, actually, some of us speak English. Some of us are more focused on culture than language.
Most of us.
Absolutely.
Now, just, yeah. You know.
Some of us pointing at myself speak English, and you too. And because in my opinion, right, like just speaking Spanish is not the measure of how Latin someone is. Like that's inappropriate in my mind. Like I have cousins who, you'd look at them and they probably look browner than I do, and they don't speak Spanish. That doesn't mean they're less Mexican than I am. And so I, you know, did some educating there. I pulled data that showed actually, you know, majority are bilingual, a large portion are English dominant, and there's still Spanish dominant people as well, of course, but being culturally relevant is what can help us reach all of them and having that nuance. But anyway, the point I wanted to make to the sponsors, the executives that were signing off on this, I said, I will commit to piloting everything with Latinos first, because they understood, like, there's a language difference. It's a very large demographic. They got the points I already put in front of them. The data points compelled them and they said yes. And I said, but if I figure something out, if I do something right, I want to transcreate it for another demographic. And it doesn't mean just do the same, like copy paste at all. It means at high level, it's a similar strategy, but let's make sure we're making it relevant to the community. So for example, in this case, I knew that having Latinos at Google have input on the collection of books was really helpful. And they loved being able to share. And like, I recommended a book to this collection. It made it human, right? And it had good insight. So I did the same thing. I reached out to the Black Googler Network and I reached out to some of my friends there. So they knew, I really think it's important to show respect for people and to tell them, like, I'm not here trying to take advantage and glean insights that I didn't pay for. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to do it right. And so I said, hey, to the leaders, we did this collection for Latino History Month. Would love to do it for the Black community during Black History Month. Are you guys in support? They said, absolutely. Please reach out. So I checked first. And then I reached out and said, you know, we're collaborating on this. BGN is officially internally sponsoring it, Black Googler Network. And so we did the same thing where we had them suggest book titles. So it was like what I was doing was saying, let's not copy paste, but let's create a best practice. The best practice here is go reach out to the ERG leaders, talk to them first. Let's make sure we're getting input and insights from them about what books matter to them. And they were like, you know what, actually, we'd love to see more of the African diaspora in it. And we got to include some Afro-Latino titles there that allowed us to cross-collaborate and promote this across both groups, which is even better. Anyway, you hear me getting excited about it, but again, to the point of the question, multicultural ERGs, is there interconnectivity there? I think that when done well, absolutely. I have seen some companies do it where they expect just any Black or brown, diverse, anyone to do the work. And I don't think that's appropriate. This is a specialization. This requires subject matter expertise. And to do it effectively, you do need to have that, the background on the data points and the business savviness and the, you know, the cultural insights. So it's not fair to just expect anyone diverse to take on this work. But I think you can collaborate in a really smart, organic way to have people feel included. Because when I see efforts done and the diverse employees of the company are like, who did that? And who signed off on this? And like, we're here. Hello. And I've seen things pop off and then people assume it's my work. And I'm like, I'm not the only Latina at the company. That wasn't me. So, you know, I think it's important to have those insights and to vet things and to make sure you're doing it in a smart way. And including people who deserve a seat at the table, even if they're not doing it full time, can they be included in some way? And even for Latino marketing, just to make sure I'm taking the point home a little bit further, I knew that as a Mexican American, I don't reflect every Latina in this country. So let's say we're doing a creative campaign. If we're bringing, we did a spot for Chromebooks during Latin Grammys, and I wanted to make sure that there's two ways I approach things. Either we tell a really authentic niche story and like, it's a Dominican story. It's not trying to be every kind of Latino. It is just that true story. And that's from a values perspective, that'll resonate more than trying to have like every culture included in a way that's inorganic. So it's either very specific to that audience, or if it's meant to reflect the community, then let me make sure, all right, let me ask my Colombian friends and my Dominican friends, my Colombian, you know, all Central, South, Caribbean, Mexican, all the above. And that was awesome. So I'd reach out to a few people who had said yes to being like, you know, kind of part-time internal advisors, and I'd say, hey, let me run this by you. Does this language turn anyone off? As long as that's not the case, because sometimes there's different words, right? And so I think sometimes people shy away from this, like, oh my God, there's so many types. There's diversity within each of our communities. But I think that, again, with the intention of either you do it completely authentically, one approach, one lens, one subgroup of our demographic or one consumer profile, or if you're including everyone, then actually include them and get that like almost like your panel, right? Of people who are going to affirm that, like, for example, a concha to a Mexican is bread. And that means something very different to a lot of other people. My sister's name is Paloma. And that means something very different to people in Venezuela. So as long as I'm not misusing words and someone somewhere else, you gotta keep it kosher and keep it appropriate and all that. So yeah, I think, and it makes it interesting in a way that I hope people don't find intimidating. If anything, it's just, no, you get to do better work with more insights and real people who then stand by it and support it when it goes live. And you have that almost, like I said, brand ambassadorship from people who are excited to be part of something bigger than themselves.
Yeah. And I think you're spot on about there's such large untapped resources within companies. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think you approached it correctly in asking people if they want to be involved, because not everybody mm-hmm. with diverse backgrounds wants to be involved necessarily, right? And that's totally cool. In fact, I struggled with it. Like, even though my company, we do multicultural marketing research, I've been pulled in, you know, post George Floyd mm-hmm. to talk about diversity and inclusion in the market research industry. And that's not necessarily something I signed up for, right? Yeah. But I think what, you know, the steps you took, like asking people and involving people that want to be involved is so important. And yeah. I asked this very similar question to Solomon Bennett, who heads up Insights at Target. Mm. And he was talking about, you know, how their multicultural marketing efforts mean nothing if their diverse employees mm-hmm. are not happy and supported.
Yeah.
I think it's very similar, right? Like you can't put out a multicultural marketing campaign and try to attract diverse consumers when your own company mm-hmm. is not supporting,
yeah.
you know, diverse workforce. And for Target, you know, their workforce, and you know, I'm talking about people working in the retail store, mm-hmm. that's their consumer too. That's their community. Like, what better place to learn about who their consumer is and the people working in the stores?
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually, I interned at Target before going to Google. So I love that you brought that up. I'm a big fan of how creative they've been working with different agencies to do true culturally relevant work. And I think you're right. I mean, the way they talk about the consumer when she goes to the store and they really know who that person is, like you said, that person is also potentially going to work there one day.
Yeah.
And work there for a very long time. I mean, people go to Target and they, like at corporate, they work there for their whole lives, many of them. And it's amazing. They have a culture people want to be a part of. And it's funny that you brought that up after talking about like opting people in. I was an intern and I'm sure someone did ask us, but I ended up in a room with other Latinos and they were asked, it was a focus group. I had never been a part of a focus group before. And I was like, it was really that I didn't know what a focus group was. I was like 19, I think, or 18. And we're sitting at a table and they're asking us about our thoughts on like back to school supplies and Dora. And I was like, what is this? And then I'm like, oh, they were like, you guys are young people that are of the background. Let's get some thoughts. And you know, they wanted to make sure Dora wasn't too like stereotypical if they carried things. And it was just, it was good. They did a good job, but I just didn't know what, I was like, why are they asking us these questions? And it was just funny because then it clicked for me. I was like, oh, because the reason I got interested in marketing at all was because of the movie What Women Want with Mel Gibson, where he's asking people for their take about different products. And they made this like Nike campaign and different campaigns. And I thought, so you can make commercials based on what people think? Like that just was mind blowing to me. I'd never seen that before. And so anyway, I was thinking about that sort of focus group he did in the movie when I was in this setting. And I was like, I think that's what this is. And so, oh, so they'll, you know, they'll listen and learn from what we're saying and use that for their marketing and different things. So it was just funny to click, like connect the dots live sitting there at Target of all companies. And my one thing I'll say, my claim to fame, we actually built a really cool supply chain optimization tool that saved them millions of dollars. It's really awesome. But the thing that my family was most proud of, I told my mom, I was like, Mom, I get to order every jar of peanut butter for every Target in America. So she told all my tias, like, everyone go buy the peanut butter at Target because she bought it. She, you know, I was with the buying team. Yeah. It was such a random, and then I remember learning from them that like, depending on where you live in the country, people like different types of peanut butter. And so that was I was in these spaces where I wasn't there necessarily as a researcher, to your point. But what stuck with me was like, wow, you have data that tells you that Peter Pan peanut butter is more popular here versus Jif somewhere else. And at the time, had I met someone like you, oh my God, I would have loved talking about this, but I didn't know people who did that kind of work. And so as I matured in my professional experience and really dove into the research and used that to frame what I was doing, it allowed me to connect with people like you and others who I'm like, oh, you guys live and breathe this too. That's awesome. Because not a lot of people, like you said, connect the dots between data, storytelling, reaching diverse communities that often are not, like their stories aren't being told and they're often not included in research panels. And the last thing I'll say to that is I was on the Nielsen Advisory Council for about 4 years and I was the co-chair. Cool plug. I was the co-chair with Lin-Manuel Miranda's dad, who's amazing, Luis Miranda. And it was a cool way outside of my work at Google to really see how a data company is thinking about our audiences. And I also work with lots of small businesses and research as well. So I love it. It's really fun. And I could sit here talking with you for hours.
That's amazing. And it's funny you bring up back to school because we did some back to school work for Target. So yeah. I wonder if we could have been involved in that focus group that you were a part of. But that would have been funny. What's funny about back to school, I actually use that example when talking to clients, because a lot, you know, one of the biggest pushbacks we get is like, you know, we are like, and back to school is a great example. Like, we all buy backpacks. Like, why does it matter if you're Latino or white or black or Asian? And what I say is like, yeah, you're right. We all buy the same things. But the idea is that the cultural drivers and, and when we talk about multicultural marketing, by the way, you know, race is really just a proxy for culture, right? Because race is a made up thing. It doesn't exist from a biological perspective. What we're getting at is culture. It's the best proxy we have for culture, right? And back to the back to school point, like, we all buy backpacks, we all buy pencils, we all buy paper, but as a company, you want to attract as many consumers to buy those staples of back to school at your store. And the drivers are so different among each group. I can't share specifics, right? But like, you know, there's a group that purchases, you know, the main driver for purchasing things at a certain store or a certain brand is to keep up with the Joneses.
Totally. Just as a clout.
Right. And there's another group that their main driver is they want to give them the best tools to learn. And then there's another group that wants to make sure that their kids have, you know, the coolest stuff, right? So yeah, we're all buying the same things, but why we buy it so different, and understanding that why is how you get that culturally relevant marketing.
It's funny you mention it. I totally agree. And I have an example to dovetail with that. This is what I meant, the layups, right? In college, I did an externship at Procter & Gamble. So I went to Ohio at headquarters. And this is the first time. So I mentioned One Woman Want shaped my perspective on like what is marketing and insights that drive marketing. This was the first time that I saw a corporate professional, my assigned mentor, explain how they use cultural insights to do different types of product development. I hadn't really seen that before. In this case, it was detergent. And she said, you know, the general market mom is buying Tide, or like is buying detergent. I already called it Tide. How funny. Branding association. she's buying detergent that is like, typically it's looking at which one kills the most germs, very much hygienic focused. The Latina mom is looking for the detergent that smells the best, super, super focused on the scents. And so she said, you know, on one shelf, it may look like there's competing products owned by different companies, but we own all of them. We're just trying to make sure that we create a product offering that is relevant to the driving values that people are shopping for. So is it hygiene and, you know, what percentage of bacteria is being killed in the washer? Is it practically the Fabuloso of laundry, which I think was like Gain. I think it was like Tide, Gain, and they own all of them, but they know they can tap into different segments of the market, tweaking their products, branding them differently, and highlighting the driver that's going to get someone to want to make that purchase in a different way. And I thought that was just so cool. And that really piqued my interest into this. And I recently shared that story with someone because we were talking about how, like, there's certain things. It's like, you can't quantify what makes someone of any, like you said, like ethnicity, race, it's all social construct, but there are things that connect people through it. It's not necessarily only language anymore. And in fact, we had a community meeting recently where people were talking about the uniqueness of what it means to be of Latin descent in the US, right? We're not white Americans, and we're not like, I'm never going to look like I'm from Mexico. Like, I have family there, and they think I'm the gringa, you know? And I'm like, I swear I listen to Nicki Jam and Luis Miguel. And they're like, no, you know, it's a very unique experience in here. And what I find interesting, though, is how these associations we have, like I said, you know, like we may not all speak Spanish or even the same Spanish, but you can't deny that most of us, most, right, asterisks, not everyone, not generalizing, or I am generalizing, but I'm not saying it's universal. Most of us are going to shimmy some kind of way when we hear suavemente. And most of us know the smell of beans cooking in a home. And doesn't mean you love them, but like there's certain things that we associate with our families. And we've also talked about like cleaning the house on a Saturday morning to music. Like, that's such a thing. And even though our communities, like one in particular, it's really focused on entrepreneurship and this community that we're part of, but what bonds people is these these like value-driven little experiences, often around products and experiences that we've consumed. And I think the more that companies understand that, it's like you can really create an emotional connection and a touch point with a consumer that can outlast generations. Like, why are we all using Vaporub? Like, do they understand how much we love that product? Are they aware that like Latina moms and abuelas are going to use that for the rest of their lives? And now we use it, you know? So anyway, I think it's really cool. I think it's neat. And I think what I hope for is the commitment that, let's say, the Procter's and Gamble's of the world and other consumer good companies typically and retail, I hope that that translates into the tech world. That's my wish. I hope that people realize like these unique cultural insights that bond us and then make us connect more than other demographics and all that. Like, there's an opportunity there. You can build tech that really relate, like helps solve our unique challenges, helps us connect in ways that we really appreciate. And there's a lot of opportunity there. So we'll see.
That's so true. Yeah. And I mean, the cleaning stuff, early on in my career, we worked a lot with Clorox. Mm. Yeah. And just so much research on how we clean. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. Like, I don't want to go on a tangent, but like we did a whole study on like how Latinos do like layered cleaning, which is unique. Like, you know, the first clean to disinfect, right? Mm-hmm. With like the stronger chemicals, and then the second to make it smell good, like with the Fabuloso. It's a whole thing. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. But awesome. Believe it or not, we're at our time. Thank you so much. I feel like, I mean, our listeners got so much out of it. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think before the podcast, we have a lot of listeners that are kind of starting mm-hmm. their diversity and inclusion journey or their multicultural marketing journey. I think you're a great resource and someone to contact for advice. I mean, how can people reach you online? Where do we find you?
Sure. So easiest, I mean, you can Google me and I'm on all the platforms, but ElianaMurillo.com has my, you know, you can contact me through my form there. My LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram is all there. On Twitter, I'm Eliana_Murillo. On Instagram, I'm in my element, ELIMENT, my name and element. And yeah, feel free to reach out. I do workshops and talks for corporate players, leaders at the companies, ERGs and stuff like that. And with, like you said, with startups, it's often less multicultural, more just high level strategy. But I try to make sure startup founders realize, especially when they're diverse, it's like you have a unique opportunity to reach audiences that people aren't even realizing yet. So let's make sure we don't overlook that opportunity. And yeah, I mean, I'm going to be doing a lot more of this. I mentioned to you, I am creating essentially a multicultural mastermind for multicultural leaders at different companies. So that's in the works. More programming for people who are ERG leaders, because I realized doing one-offs for companies is great, but can I create more of a community and just ongoing programming, because the work doesn't end after Black History Month and Latin Heritage Month. You know, the work continues, and I really want to help people not feel like they're reinventing the wheel and starting at square one. So if I can be a resource, I'm happy to help. Please reach out. And I'm excited to, of course, keep chatting with you about all this. I think we have lots of work to do.
Agreed. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.